Today, on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
I think it's important to balance imperfect immunity with very real clinical risk, while also trying to make sure that we are appropriately managing the underlying disease.
Today, Drs. Cohen and Chang join the podcast to discuss vaccination and response in patients with CLL in this PureDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Jonathan Cohen, professor in the Department of Hematology and Medical Oncology and co-director of the Lymphoma Program at Winship Cancer Institute of Emory University in Atlanta.
And I'm Dr. Anders Chang, assistant professor in the Department of Hematology and Medical Oncology, also at the Winship Cancer Institute of Emory University in Atlanta.
It's great to be here with you, Andres.
The pleasure's mine, Jonathan.
So, Andres, despite all the therapeutic advances in CLL, infection remains one of the leading causes of morbidity and mortality for our patients. Now, vaccination is a cornerstone of prevention, but in CLL, immune dysfunction is present from the time of diagnosis and can be compounded by treatments, which raises real questions about how effective vaccines really are in this population. In this discussion, let's talk about what we know about vaccine responses in CLL. We know that patients receive many different therapies, and so it's good to talk about how this may affect the vaccine responses and generally how we're thinking about vaccine strategy in real-world practice. I think it's important to balance imperfect immunity with very real clinical risk while also trying to make sure that we are appropriately managing the underlying disease. So could you first talk to us a little bit about immune dysfunction in CLL in general, both for patients that are untreated as well as those that do receive therapy, and what are some of the things that lead to vaccines underperforming?
Yes, Jonathan. So as you alluded to, CLL patients do have a defective immune system. We know that from multiple studies looking at both B cells and T cells, and we know that patients have a lower B cell immunity, mainly because when you measure their levels of immunoglobulins, they tend to be low. We call that hypogammaglobulinemia. But other aspects of the immune system can also be affected by CLL, regardless of whether they get treatment. And those are harder to measure, such as T cell responses, and some of the other aspects of the immune system are also impaired.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks for summarizing this. Obviously, it's very, very complicated. One of the things I think that is important that I at least counsel my own patients about is that there is not necessarily evidence that the vaccines are unsafe in patients with CLL. And so it certainly is reasonable to receive them. But I was hoping you could summarize some of the evidence about the more timely or the more commonly encountered vaccines, including influenza, COVID-19, shingles. What are your thoughts about those specific vaccines and how they perform in patients with CLL?
Yeah. So most of the data that we know so far in terms of vaccine responses have come out with the COVID mRNA vaccines, obviously because that was a very important and relevant topic back when we were in the middle of the pandemic. But there have also been studies that have come out looking at influenza, pneumococcus, shingles, and some of these other vaccines. And in general, we do see that there's a substantial proportion of individuals that do not mount a proper serological response when compared to the general population. This is true regardless of whether the vaccine is an mRNA vaccine, or is a conjugate vaccine, or is a protein vaccine. And it's true regardless of whether they have received any sort of therapy for their CLL, or if they are just on surveillance.
Now, one thing that I think is important to keep in mind as we talk about patients with CLL is we know that over the course of their lifetime, they're going to be on a number of different therapies and that each of these may have a different impact on the way that they respond to vaccines that they receive. So it's no surprise that patients who receive anti-CD20 antibodies, so rituximab or obinutuzumab, can have profound and prolonged impairment of their B-cell immunity. These are antibodies that are specifically designed to target the B-cells that make up their CLL. But in addition, we're very fortunate in the current era to have both BTK inhibitors as well as the BCL-2 inhibitor venetoclax, both of which are very, very active in patients with CLL and can result in long-term remission and often a component of long-term therapy. So can you talk a little bit about what we know about the vaccine response for patients who receive BTK inhibitors or who receive venetoclax or perhaps even in combination and what those patients can expect?
Sure, Jonathan. So you're right that the anti-CD20 monoclonal antibodies induce a profound B-cell response. And a lot of the data that we have in terms of how patients with CLL and or B-cell lymphomas in general respond to vaccines have pointed out consistently that patients who receive these anti-CD20 monoclonal antibodies, particularly within the first year, have a more profound immune suppression. There are data now coming out looking at patients who have been getting BTK inhibitors, particularly alone, where we also see that these patients don't mount a proper immune response. This also makes sense from a biological standpoint because BTK is a very important protein for proper B cell function. And when we use these inhibitors, it does inhibit BTK both in the CLL clone as well as in otherwise normal CLL, normal B cells. Data coming out looking at the venetoclax is a little bit harder to look at, mainly because the way we normally use venetoclax, particularly in the frontline setting, is in combination with the anti-CD20 monoclonal antibodies. And because these monoclonal antibodies hang around and their effect can be felt profoundly for several months, even after this treatment has been completed, the use of venetoclax really overlaps with the timing in which the immune suppression from these anti-CD20 monoclonal antibodies are still in effect. So we don't know as much about venetoclax-based regimens and what the exact and precise effect is on immune function. But I think that over time, we will be able to tease out with some other mechanistic studies.
Great. Well, thank you. So let's summarize this and really talk about how to employ these data in the clinic, where we have to make practical decisions about when and whether to administer a vaccine for individual patients. So one of the things that I like to talk to all of my patients about at the time that they're diagnosed and throughout the course of their disease is that they are likely to be at risk for infections and that they are less likely to experience the highest level of protection from vaccines. On the other hand, we know that this is a disease that patients will live with for many years, hopefully throughout a normal lifespan. And so it's not practical for a patient to totally avoid exposure to illnesses throughout their entire course. And so I'd be curious what you do in your own clinic. When you see a patient with CLL, how do you discuss vaccines? When do you recommend them? Do you typically recommend them for patients both on or off therapy before they start therapy? How do you typically think about this?
Yeah, sure. So when I talk to patients about CLL, when they first come in soon after diagnosis, I do counsel them about the risk of increased frequency and severity of infection, particularly as they live with their disease over the course of hopefully many, many years. And once we discuss that particular risk, we tend to start talking about vaccines and vaccine-preventable illnesses. And aside from encouraging my patients to receive these vaccinations, the ones that are available, particularly the age-appropriate vaccines, I also counsel them about the importance of encouraging their close family members, their loved ones, for them to get vaccinated as well. Because if you can protect the patient by minimizing the amount of disease that are around them, that can be quite significant. We do talk about vaccination before treatment initiation. I think that it depending on the time of the year, particularly, let's say, if it's right before the influenza vaccination season, if the patient needs therapy, we can try to work around so that they can get vaccinated. We wait a few weeks after vaccination so that hopefully the vaccine will have some effect in their body in terms of eliciting an immune response. And then we start therapy. We talked a lot about whether vaccines can be beneficial or not. And I tend to tell my patients that no vaccination means you get zero benefit of having a potential response, but then having received the vaccine, you can have at least some benefit, albeit it might be a little bit less than in the general population. I don't know if you counsel it in a similar way.
Yeah, no, that sounds very familiar to the discussion that we have. One other thing that I would point out that I think is important is that although many of these illnesses can be severe, for most patients, if they were to develop influenza or COVID-19, most patients will recover fully. And so I think in addition to recommending vaccines to try to prevent and limit the likelihood of severe illness, it's also important to inform patients that if they were to get sick, that they need to be seen either by their primary care doctor or through their oncologist and receive appropriate antivirals if indicated, but that most of the time patients will recover fully from this. And so it's not necessarily an emergency for most patients, but just something for them to keep in mind over the course of their disease. So thank you very much for your time, Andres. It sounds like we agree in general that vaccines remain essential in CLL, even when responses are incomplete.
Absolutely. I think the key is being early, being proactive, and have this layer prevention. And then, of course, setting realistic expectations with our patients while doing everything we can to reduce the risk of infections for them. Thank you, Jonathan.
And thank you to our audience for watching.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PureDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PureDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions, please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@PureDirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you can get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup or just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Cohen and Chang. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.